So our presentation today is Citizens Climate Lobby Strategies for Legislative Success by Ken Skog. Ken has been a member of Prairie since 1985 and has participated in the Madison chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby, off and on since about 2010. So we welcome Ken.
Thank you, Barb. I really appreciated the children's story. I think that story about people power is emblematic of the kind of thing that the Citizens Climate Lobby attempts to capture here in the United States. Citizens Climate Lobby is a grassroots volunteer organization of more than 200,000 supporters across more than 420 chapters in the United States. There's a chapter in almost every congressional district, and there are 18 active chapters in Madison. The overriding goal of CCL is to build political will for passing federal legislation to reduce climate change. I'm going to focus on how they do their work as opposed to why they do their work. I think we've all heard plenty of information about why there's an urgent need to take action to slow climate change. So I'll speak briefly about their overall strategy and why they think there's a good chance of it working. And then I'll give quite a bit in the way of details about their tactics, how they go about doing their work, which they call levers of political will. I'll also talk about three of my specific experiences that illustrate how CCL works. One of the reasons that CCL feels it can be successful is the origin of the strategy that they've been using. Next slide. The strategy came from an organization founded in 1980 called Results. It was founded by Sam Daly Harris. The mission of the Results organization is to empower individuals to advocate effectively to end global poverty by U.S. congressional action. It's a grassroots organization of individual citizens, and it's been quite successful in passing and promoting anti-poverty legislation at global level, health legislation, and education legislation. And just three examples of their achievements include securing funding for the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, supporting the passage of the Microenterprise Results and Accountability Act, and supporting the passage of the Education for All Act, which promotes educational initiatives around the world. John's giving me a thumbs up. And Sam Daly Harris has gone on to write a book about his experiences. The book is entitled Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the break between people and government. One of the volunteers for Results was a man named Marshall Saunders. He worked particularly in supporting microfinance organizations around the world. He realized that the strategy model that Results has been using could be adapted to promote action on climate change. So in 2007, he founded the Citizens Climate Lobby that is based on the same strategy elements as Results. And there are four basic principles. The first is that it's nonpartisan. The second is that it's citizen empowered. It's individual volunteers like myself who take action as opposed to businesses or other kinds of lobbying groups. It focuses on building long-term relationships with individual legislators. We just don't go in one time and blast them on a particular issue and then go away. The intent is to work with them over a long period of time. And it's highly focused on very specific policy topics and very specific pieces of legislation where we think there's the prospect of bipartisan support. So here's a quote from Marshall Saunders, the founder. I used to think that important people were taking care of important problems. No. Preserving a livable world is up to us little people. What we do and do not do really counts. For much of the life of CCL, from 2007 until 2022, it was focused primarily, or almost I should say exclusively, on one kind of legislation, and that was legislation to put a price on carbon. And most recently, that legislation has been called the Carbon Fee and Dividend Act. That bill would place a fee on the carbon contents of fossil fuels as they came out of the ground. And the revenue generated would go back as dividends to every household in the United States. So there would be no extra revenue coming into the government for government operations. It would all be given back to households. And this has actually garnered quite a bit of support. Interestingly, the American Petroleum Institute is in favor of a carbon tax, if you can believe that. Although there are a lot of provisions which make it unpalatable to a lot of people. But in 2022, Citizens Climate Lobby expanded the areas, its policy areas, to include promoting healthy forests, because there's considerable potential to improve the way we protect carbon in forests and restore carbon in forests, and also promoting urban tree cover. There's a lot of potential there for legislation that can help. They also promote building electrification efficiency to reduce emissions from heating and cooling. And they advocate for promoting clean energy permitting reform. Currently, it takes about 7 years to get a project that's ready to go, a wind or solar project, connected to the electrical grid, because there are so many federal agencies and state agencies that have to pass on permits. So federal legislation can help simplify this. Next slide. So now we get down into the weeds, progressively more into the weeds as we go here. They're tactics, which are levers of political will. The first of these levers, and one that is probably most prominent, is direct lobbying of Congress, offices of Congress. There's a major lobbying day every June and another lobbying day in November. And then throughout the year, individual chapters will lobby individual congressional offices in the district. Second lever is media relations, and that includes letters to the editor, op-ed pieces, social media. And the intent there is to keep in the public mind the urgency of taking action on climate change and urging people to contact their legislators on specific pieces of legislation. And when they do act, you compliment them. Make sure the public knows you appreciate that. And I'll talk a bit about my experience in writing letters to the editor. The third lever is grassroots outreach. That's talking to individual people, either by presentations or by tabling, which I've done some, and I'll talk about local tabling activities. A fourth lever is getting local government officials and organizations to speak out and support legislation. And a fifth lever is the development of chapters, recruiting of volunteers, and the training of volunteers so people feel confident in talking about and speaking knowledgeable about the kinds of action that needs to be taken and the kinds of legislation that's needed. So next slide. I participated so far in just one national lobbying day in June of 2023. And prior to the actual lobbying day, there's a two-day conference. And in 2023, just to give you an idea about some of the speakers, one speaker was a former Republican congressman, Francis Rooney, who spoke about the bipartisan appeal of carbon pricing, why both sides of the aisle could support that. A second speaker was Rachel Kite, who's the dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. And she spoke about the importance of grassroots advocacy. She's also on a UN panel, advisory panel on taking action on climate change. A third presentation was by a panel of young people, young activists, who spoke about the critical role of young people in promoting climate action. On the third day of the conference, a Tuesday, about 1,000 volunteers headed to the Capitol for meetings. The CCL national staff had arranged meetings with almost all of the offices of every senator and every congressman, over 90%, or well, actually about 90%. And that was 436 of 485 offices. Many of the meetings were with staff, but sometimes you actually met with a congressman or the senator. In those meetings, there's a primary ask. So every representative will be asked to support the same thing. And in the case of June 2023, every representative was asked to submit or to support permitting reform. And then there are secondary asks, which can differ a little bit from representative to representative. And those are ones that we, CCL, thinks are more likely to garner support, where both sides of the aisle are more likely to support it. And for the Senate side, all the senators were asked to support something called the Prove It Act, and I'll explain that a little bit more later. So getting further into the weeds, next slide. Planning for a lobby meeting is very highly structured. There are typically 4 to 6 people in a lobby group, and each person has a specific role. There is a leader, a timekeeper, a note taker, a constituent, in most cases there are constituents involved, who can be a storyteller and a person who gives an appreciation. And then there's a lead advocate for the primary ask and a second advocate for the secondary ask. And then there's a person who's an expert on the primary ask who studied up on it somewhat more and can answer questions. So the day before lobby day, the people in a lobbying team get together and practice their routine for their lobby meeting. And typically, a volunteer will be assigned to 3 different lobby meetings. The teams are organized to have at least one constituent, sometimes more, going into the lobby meetings, but there could be participants who are from any state. A lobby session begins with a question, very important question: how much time do you have? And the timekeeper knows to make sure things are moving along and they're getting through the agenda. Typically, meetings may last about 20 minutes, but give or take. And the first step is to have the leader ask each person to introduce themselves and indicate why, in a sentence ideally, why the climate issue is important to them, why they're there. Next, a constituent or other person gives an appreciation for a specific contribution that the member of Congress has made. Whether they're Republican, Democrat, it doesn't necessarily need to be climate related, but an appreciation of some action, some support they've given to an issue. They may give a story linked to the district, and the intent is to try to establish or suggest their common values between the lobbying group and the representative, whoever they may be. Next, the lead advocate gives the primary ask, and at some point, there may be a secondary ask if provided there's time. And then on the part of the team, silence. The intent is for two-thirds of the time to be listening, where we'll have the staff person or the member of Congress telling us why they either support or have reservations about the primary ask. And they may also ask, well, I really need more information to understand whether or not I might support this. So there's a record made, and that record is critical because at first it helps make sure that whatever information is requested is actually delivered. And then second, it can be used for future lobby meetings. If you knew there was a specific concern, that concern can be answered in a future lobby meeting. And then there's a close where the leader expresses appreciation for the meeting. So next slide. So my experiences specifically were with meeting Representative Pocan and Representative Fitzgerald of Wisconsin in June of 2023. Mark Pocan met with us himself. He has been a very strong supporter of CCL's carbon fee and dividend. He's been a co-sponsor. He's also very supportive of permitting reform. So we spent most of the time after we introduced ourselves talking. He was telling us, strategizing essentially about how to the concerns that would have to be addressed on the Republican side to get a piece of legislation passed. So it's mainly strategizing on his part about how we might need to be approaching Republicans. For our Representative Fitzgerald's staff, we met with their legislative director. As is not uncommon, the legislative director had to be with Representative Fitzgerald, who had a subcommittee meeting the same morning as our meeting with the legislative director. So what that meant is that we met with him in a hallway outside the committee meeting room. And so first question, how much time do you have? And I think it was about 10 minutes. So we dispensed with introductions, we did an appreciation, and then went immediately to talking about the primary ask. And the legislative director's response was very courteous. He asked some questions. And he said, well, the representative is going to look to the recommendation of the Republican caucus on this issue because it's not an area of specialty for him. Representative Fitzgerald's, one of his specialties is small business and finance policy. And that was the subject of the subcommittee meeting that he was in that morning. So next slide. So the second thing I'll talk about, the second letter is one kind of media outreach, and that's letters to the editor. And here the idea is that you're trying to keep the concern, the need for action, the public mind continually. And the Citizens Climate Lobby nationwide has between 100 and 200 letters to the editor published every month. And of course, this depends upon what legislation is coming up and what, you know, how the urgency of promoting particular legislation. And there's a specific strategy about how you structure your letters, particularly in response to a particular article or opinion piece. And one of the things I realized that's really encouragement for me to write letters is that it doesn't really matter if your letter gets published. Because if the editors get multiple letters on a particular topic or a particular article, it increases the probability that some letter will be published. So over time, over the last, since about 2017, I've submitted 10 letters to the editor, and seven of those have been published. And they're virtually all in response to a news article, sometimes related to policy. Some years ago was about the fact that the DNR was going to have all references to climate change expunged from the DNR website. And I said, that's a bad idea. In a recent letter, I applauded a study that was cited in an article that showed that carbon taxes were one of the most effective ways to mitigate climate change. And that one was published. So the third lever that I'll talk about is tabling. In Madison, we're fortunate that we have certain places where there's an opportunity to meet lots of people, to have put up a table and engage in conversations with a lot of people. And I've been involved in four of these over time: the Garden Expo each spring, Canucopia a little later in the spring, and farmers markets in the summer. There's also in tabling at the World Dairy Expo, which I haven't done. But in each of these, the intent is to engage with the attendees and get them raise their awareness about the issue and ways they could be involved if they're interested in being involved. So I'm going to talk about the World Dairy Expo, even though I haven't tabled there. It's a good example because Bruce Beck, the organizer of that, has documented how the interactions with the people attending have changed from the first time they went to the most recent time they went. So next slide. The people who attend the Dairy Expo are a combination of dairy farmers and the people who sell things to dairy farmers. The first time that CCL did tabling there in 2023, there was a lot of skepticism, and attendees were really surprised. Well, what is a climate advocacy group doing here? They're not trying to sell us anything, are they? So there's a fair amount of pushback. People came up and said, well, it's not a problem for us dairy farmers. Our carbon cycling on our operations is very rapid. And the emissions from animals is overblown. And we don't want government intervention. So a lot of pushback. But by 2024, there is a considerable change in the kind of engagement, because in the meantime, there's been quite a bit of federal legislation which really provides benefits to farmers who are interested in changing practices or getting solar panels. For example, there were questions about how to obtain environmental credits for shifting practices, you know, going to no-till sort of agriculture. And they were more interested in ways they could be measuring their carbon footprint. So kind of the type of engagement had really changed over those period of years. So next slide, please. The current focus is on four kinds of legislation. I'll really just talk about one, and that's the Prove It Act, which has very high bipartisan support, possibly even higher on the Republican side. The act calls for data collection that would be needed to eventually put a tariff on imports to the United States where the emissions in making that product are higher in the foreign country than in the United States. So that means that by imposing this tariff, it would give a competitive advantage to U.S. companies. The European Union is already instituting this sort of tariff. And by having a tariff as well, it put us in a better position to negotiate trade with the European Union. And that's passed out of Senate committee by a vote of 15-4. So I think it's at the stage now where it could be voted on by the entire Senate. I'll skip the others. Next slide, please. The Citizens Climate Lobby has had some successes. The growing climate, and each of these pieces of legislation, they've made a contribution to its passage. For instance, the Growing Climate Solutions Act which gives farmers access to carbon credit markets. They were instrumental in getting 40 co-sponsors for the legislation. Inflation Reduction Act, intended to have a big effect on reducing U.S. emissions. And the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, CCL was instrumental in getting support for carbon capture and storage. So each of these, they had a specific sort of contribution. So I hope you can see that their methods are very highly organized. Because they're so highly organized, I think they have a reasonable chance of being effective even in a polarized political environment, because of the specific appeal to measures that have bipartisan support. So I'll close with a quote from a professor of political science at Harvard. Their name is Erica Chenoweth. And this is a quote from a chapter they wrote in the climate book by Greta Thunberg. And the title of the chapter, their chapter, is People Power. And in the quote, they are referring to percentages of population of a country. In many countries around the world, a 3.5% tipping point has led to major breakthroughs for protest movements. And studies suggest that there is a 25% tipping point for genuine behavioral change and transformation on a larger scale. Both of these tipping points are within reach. Tens of millions of people have been taking action to transform our relationship to the planet. Formidable obstacles remain, but if we take history as our guide, these can be overcome by good strategy, effective organizing, and people power. So with that, I will close. And thank you.